We continue Be'ezrat Hashem in our limud of Masechet Ketubot. We are up to Daf Tzadik Daled. We begin on the last line of Tzadik Gimel, Amud Bet. This limud is Le'ilui Nishmat Rav Shalom Kohen ben Tfach HaMalka, Yair ben Tov, Anaim ben Chatun, Yom Tov ben Chana, Shaul ben Latif, Erez ben Miriam, Baruch ben Shelomo, Sulika bat Chana, Eta, Rivka bat Mordechai, Rivka bat Devora, Eva Shlomit bat Ilana Esther, Chaya Esther, Chava bat Sara, and Luba bat Mazal, Alehem HaShalom. Also, Lizchut, Refuah Shlema for Elisheva bat Neta, Esther bat Sarah, Hana bat Sulika, and Gabriela Masuda bat Sarah. We saw in the Mishnah a machloket between Tanakama and Ben Nanas regarding the Shvu'ah, the obligation to swear of the fourth wife. Remember, the Mishnah gives us a case of someone who was married to four wives, and then he died, and now they come to seize property or to collect for their ketubah. So the Mishnah said, the first one, the one who was married first, has precedence, has seniority. She comes before the second is before the third is before the fourth. And then Tanakama said, the first one, when she collects for her ketubah, she has to swear to the second wife that she didn't receive or take anything unlawfully from the property. And then she could collect her ketubah. The second one, before she collects, has to swear to the third. The third one has to swear to the fourth. According to Tanakama, the fourth one doesn't have to swear. I mean, whatever is left, she's collecting for her ketubah, and it's not meshubah to anyone. Everyone else already collected their ketubah. So the land that she is collecting is not anything that has a lien on it by any one of the other wives. And therefore, to who is she obligated to swear? That's what Tanakama says, Nifa'at shelo bishvua. She can collect without a shvua. Ben Nanas, however, said, what do you mean? Just because she's the last one, she should have that advantage? She's also obligated to swear and before she collects. So the Gemara is asking, B'mai kamifligi, in what are they arguing? Why are Tanakama and Ben Nanas arguing here? I mean, after all, we do understand the reasoning of Tanakama. Basically, we need to understand why is Ben Anas arguing. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel says, Kegon, the Mishnah is talking in the following case. Kegon shenimtzet achat mehen sade she'ena shelo. In a case where it's discovered that one of the fields of the estate of the deceased husband was actually not his, meaning the husband stole it from someone else. So in other words, the first three wives, right, each one collected their own field from the estate as a collection for their ketubah. And now it's discovered that, let's say, for example, the third wife, the field that she took was actually not his. He stole it. So it's very likely that now that field is going to be repossessed by its real owner. And therefore, she's the third wife. If she took that field, she stands to lose. So it's very possible that she's going to need to collect her ketubah from the fourth field, right? So that's why she's obligating, she has the right to obligate the fourth wife to swear that she didn't take anything during the lifetime of the husband as a collection of the ketubah before she takes that fourth field. So now, the machloket between Tanakama and Ben Anas, if she is in fact obligated to swear or not, is depending on the following. Ubebal chov me'uchar shekadam ve'gava kamiflegi. The machloket is regarding a baal chov, a creditor, right? Me'uchar, baal chov me'uchar, his shtar is dated later than that of another creditor. So he's owed money, but he's a malveh who came later than one who came before him. Shekadam vegava. And he collected first, before the other creditor. So the balchov me'uchar collected before the balchov, the other balchov, who is really earlier than him, leaving nothing for the other creditor to collect. So the question is, do we say that collection that the balchov me'uchar did, is it valid? Is it effective? Or can the earlier Baal Chov take it away from him? That is Kamifligi, that's the machloket between Tanakama and Ben Anas. Tanakama savar ma shegava lo gava. According to Tanakama, the later creditor, the Baal Chov Me'uchar, who collected, lo gava, his collection is not a full collection, which means he's going to have to give up the property that he collected for the earlier creditor to collect his debt. So similarly, in our case over here, if the property that was given to one of the first three wives is repossessed because it was found out that it was stolen and there's nothing left for her to collect, so now the fourth wife who took the fourth field, but being that she was a later wife, that's like the later Baal Cho, she's going to have to relinquish that property, right, that she took. And she's going to have to give it to the third wife who came before her. So there's no reason, according to Tanakama, there's no reason for the fourth one to swear about anything. What swear? It doesn't make a difference. If need be, if it comes out that the third wife, her field is taken, is repossessed, then she has full right to take the fourth field from out of the hands of the fourth wife, because the collection that the fourth wife did is not fully valid because she is a Baal Chov Me'uchar. So therefore, there's no need for a Shvua. Whereas, Uven Anas Sava Mashigava Gava, Ben Anas holds that the later creditor, what he collected, is a collection, and it's not taken from him. It's not taken away from him in order to pay the earlier creditor. So therefore, according to Ben Anas, since the fourth wife collected the fourth field and it cannot be taken away from her, so at least the third wife can obligate her to take a shvuah, to swear that she's collecting the property legally and that she didn't get anything as a payment for the ketubah when the husband was still alive. That at least she's obligated to do. Because since she legally can keep the collected field that she took, then she at least has to swear to the third wife that what she is collecting now is legal. However, we have a different way to explain the machloket. Rabbi Nachman Amar Rabba Baravua, Rabbi Nachman says, in the name of Rav Nachman, in the name of Rabba Baravua, he says we can explain the Kule Alma, really both Rabbanan, both Tanakama and Ben Anas, they hold Mashigava Lo Gava, that when a later Baal Chov collects, his collection is not a full collection. And if, let's say, the earlier Baal Chov has to give up what he took for himself, he can come and collect that field, he can take that field away from the Baal Chov Me'uchar. But what is the machloket between Ben Anas and Tanakama? V'hacha b'chayshinan shema tachsif kamifligi. Over here they're disagreeing whether we are chayshinan, whether we are concerned, shema tachsif. Maybe she will cause the field to depreciate. Maybe she will deplete the field. She will cause it to lose its value. Are we concerned about that? Mar Savar Ben Anas holds Chayshinan Shema Tachsif. He says, if we're going to allow the fourth wife to collect the fourth field without any Shvu'ah, so then she might think to herself, oh, they're not making me swear? So this field is not given to me totally. It's only temporary. By the time the Nigzal, the one who was stolen from, will come and repossess his field, she's going to come, the third wife is going to come and collect it from me and take it away from me. So why should I invest into this field? She's not going to take care of the field, and the field is going to depreciate. It's going to be tachsif, it's going to be depleted. So therefore, Chachamim obligated the fourth one to swear to the third one, according to Ben Anas, in order that she should see that this is a serious collection that she received here. It's a very serious matter. She's going to take concern and be responsible to take care of the field. But Tanakama was not concerned that this is going to happen, that she's going to think that it's only temporary, therefore she won't invest effort in taking care of cultivating the land. We're not worried about that, and therefore there's no need to make her swear, because after all, the halacha is, as we said, a Baal Chov Me'uchar, that's Kodem Ve'Goveh, that collects, Mashigava Lo Gava, that collection is not a full valid collection until everything is settled. And therefore, there's no need to make her swear. Abaye Amar, Abaye comes, and he gives a third option how to explain the machloket. De Abaye Kashisha Ika Benayhu. The machloket between Tanakama and Ben Anas is regarding the psak of Abaye Kashisha, Abaye the elder. What did Abaye Kashisha say? The Tane Abaye Kashisha, Yetomim She'amru Gedolim, Ve'en Tzech Lomar Ketanim. Yetomim She'amru, these Yetomim, the orphans, with regards to whom the Chachamim were talking about when they said that one is not allowed to collect property from them without taking a Shavuah. There's halacha, en nifraim minichse yetomim ela bishvuah. We cannot collect from the property of yetomim, of orphans, without first swearing. So Abaye Kshisha said, yetomim shamu, when Chachamim said this about yetomim, they were referring to gdolim, to adult orphans. Ve'en tzarich lomar ktanim, and needless to say, orphans who are ktanim, which means even adult orphans, right, are sometimes not necessarily aware of the business matters of their parents, and therefore people can sometimes take advantage of that and easily press claims against the property and take advantage of the fact that they don't know anything. And therefore, the halacha is, according to Abaye Kashisha, anyone who wants to collect money from the estate, even if it's now belonging to adult yetomim, is required to swear. And needless to say, ktanim. So this is the point of machloket. Tanakama letle de Abaye Kashisha. Tanakama does not hold of this psak of Abaye Kashisha. And that's why he holds that the fourth wife does not have to swear when she's collecting her ktuba. Who is she swearing for? The first three wives, they already collected their fields. Who is she swearing for? The yetomim? The yetomim are adult yetomim. She doesn't have to swear. Uben nanas itle de Abaye Kashisha. However, Ben Anas holds, like Abaye Kashisha, that the reason the fourth wife has to swear is because she's, after all, she's collecting from the estate of the Yetomim. Even though they are adults, you still have to swear before you collect from them.
Amar Rav Huna said, Hanetre ache utre shutafe. In a case where you have two brothers and two partners, or two partners, two brothers or two partners, De'itlehu dina behadechad, and they have a legal case against another individual. Ve'azalchad minayu behadele dina, and one of them went to attend to the legal proceedings in the bedim against him, and he lost. Lama tzeidach lememarle, the other brother or the other partner cannot say to the other litigant, at lav bal devarim didi at. I'm not legally answerable to you, which means I'm not bound by the psak of Bedin because I was not represented. I was not there. It was my partner. Can't say that. Ela shlichute avad. The halacha is that the brother who went, the partner who went, who appeared in the Bedin, is considered to have acted as his shaliach, as his agent. So you cannot say to that person, lav baal dvarim didiat. Ikla Rav Nachman leSura. The Gemara tells us a story. Rav Nachman once happened to visit the city of Sura in Bavel. Shailui, they asked him, Ki ay gavna mai? What's the halacha in a case like this that was presented by Rav Huna, where one of the two brothers or one of the two partners went to the Bedin? Amar li, hu matnitin hi. So Rav Nachman said to them, it's our Mishnah. What does our Mishnah say? Harishona nishbat lashniya. The woman who married first, she swears before collecting her ktubah, she swears to the second one. Ushniya la shlishit, the second swears to the third. Ushlishit la rvi'it, the third swears to the fourth. Ve'ilu rishona la shlishit la ketane. It doesn't say that the first wife who is swearing, she has to swear to the third or the fourth. It says, arishona nishbat la shniya. La maitama, why is it that it doesn't say in the Mishnah, she swears to the third? It only says she swears to the second wife. Lav mishum de shlichuta avda? Isn't it because when the second wife requires the first one to swear, she's acting as the shaliach, as the agent of the third and fourth wives as well, because they both share the same concern regarding the first wife, if she already received from her ktubah and if she's collecting unlawfully. So we see that this concept that Rav Huna said, Shlichute Avad, is true. We see it from our Mishnah. The Gemara, however, says, Mi Dami, are both cases comparable? Can you compare the two? Hatam, over there in the case of the Mishnah, Shvuah Le'echad u Shvuah Le'me'ah. I mean, a shvuat to one person is the same as swearing to 100. There's no need for the first wife to swear to each one about the same thing. As long as she swears once, that shvuah is enough. That's why she doesn't have to swear to the third and to the fourth specifically. Not because of any shlichut, but because a shvuah, by its very nature, once it is done once, that's it. You have a shvuah, she swore. Haha, but over here, in the case of the two brothers or the two partners, so the second brother who didn't go to court or the second partner, Amar, he could say, look, ilu ana havai, if I was there, I would have presented a more convincing claim. So after all, he could have a claim to say that I'm not bound by this psak, that because I was not represented. So it's possible. In other words, the Gemara is saying there's no proof from our Mishnah to the halacha that Rav Huna said. Velo amaran ela delo ite b'mata. Now, this safek that we just said, this doubt, is only delo ite b'mata. It's only if the second brother or the partner is not b'mata, is not in the town. When the legal proceedings are taking place in the Bedin, he's not in town b'chlal. Aval ite b'mata, but if, let's say he was in town, he should have come to the Bedin to participate. If he doesn't come, it's very clear that he is okay with allowing his brother or his partner to represent him. The only time he can maybe claim that he was not represented and therefore he's not bound is if he wasn't in town at the time, he wasn't able to come. But if he's able to come and he doesn't, it's considered his shlichut, like Rav Huna said. Itmar, it has been taught, shenish tarot hayotzim biyom echad, in a case of two documents, two shtarot, that are issued on the same day, which means a shtar where an individual either gave or sold the same thing to two different people. So you have two shtarot, and they were dated on the same day. Rav amar, cholkim u'shmuel amar shuda dedaini. Rav says, well, they divided between them because it's impossible to determine who it belongs to. We're talking about, let's say, the same field. And you have two people who have a shtar dated on the same day that it was sold to them. So now this is a safek. Who was it sold to first? Which means it really belongs to him. So according to Rav, the way to solve it is, cholkim, we divide it equally between them. Ushmuel amar, shuda de dayane. Shmuel says, no, it's up to the discretion of the dayanim, whoever they see fit. Leima Rav de Amar Kerabi Meir de Amar Ede Chatima Karti Ushmuel de Amar Kerabi Lazar de Amar Ede Mesira Karti. Gemara tries to explain the machloket. Maybe Rav, who says Cholkim, it's because he holds like Rabbi Meir, that famously says Ede Chatima Karti, that the chatimot, the witnesses who sign on the document, they're the ones that are koret. Koret means they cause the transaction to take effect. So here, since the seller or the giver of the field, he didn't ask the edim who sign to write down the exact time of the day. So that shows that he wishes to give it to two people. He just didn't want to reveal that he was giving it to both of them. So therefore, since Ede Chatima Karti, since the ones who effect the transaction are the signatories, are the Edim who sign, and they were not told to write the exact time of their signatures. So that's why Rav says Cholkim. Shmuel Amar de'amar ki Rabbi Lazar. But Shmuel holds like Rabbi Lazar de'amar, who holds, no. Ede Mesira Karti. It's the witnesses of the Mesira, of the giving over of the shtar, is what affects the transaction. Which means the act of transferring, of giving over the shtar to the beneficiary, to the one who is receiving the gift, that's what causes the transaction to take effect. So therefore, the fact that the two shtarot have the same date has no consequence, because We assume that the shtarot were not given exactly simultaneously to both of them at the same time, and therefore the property belongs exclusively to the one who received it first. So that's why, according to Shmuel, we say shuda de dayani. It goes by the discretion of the dayanim. Again, if it goes by the edechatima, that's when it takes effect. Okay, so we see that the Chatimot, the signatories, they didn't write any date. The fact that they weren't, meaning not date, the hour of the day. So the fact that they weren't told to write the exact hour, that means that the owner of the land who was giving it away or was selling it had in mind really that both of them should have it. But the one who, but the Shmuel who holds like Rabbi Lazar, Edem Esira, it goes by the giving over, by the moment of the transmission of the shtar to the beneficiary, that's when it takes effect. Well, then it really was in mind, the intention was to give it to the one who received it first. So that's why Shmuel says, you can't just say cholkim, you say shuda didaini. But the Gemara says, lo, that's not the way to explain the machloket. De kule alma ke Rabbi Elazar. You could always say that both Rav and Shmuel hold like Rabbi Elazar, that it's edem esira that are karti. Ve'hacha be'hacha mifligi. Over here, the machloket is more fundamental than that. Rav savar chaluka adifa. It's a machloket in what is a more preferable psak to resolve a safek in monetary cases. According to Rav, chaluka adifa. To divide, division is the preferable way to go. Shmuel holds, leaving the decision up to the discretion of the dayanim, shuda de daini, that's what's adif. So that's the machloket between them. So what did we come up with? That it's very possible to say that both Rav and Shmuel hold, like Rabbi Elazar, that edem esira karti, that the effect of the transaction happens at the moment of mesira, by the edim, by the witnesses of the transmission of the giving over. So the Gemara is asking, umi matzit mukmitla l'Rav, ke Rabbi Elazar, can we really establish the opinion of Rav in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Elazar? Ve'ha'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, didn't Rav Yehuda, the Talmid of Rav, say in the name of Rav, halacha ke Rabbi Elazar begitin, the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, who says, edem esira by gitin, by divorce documents, and ki amrita kamed Shmuel amar af bishtarot, and when I said that halacha in front of Shmuel, Shmuel said, you know what? Even by regular documents, even by regular shtarot, halacha is like Rabbi Elazar. Michlal derav savar bishtarot lo. So you see that Rav argues with Shmuel and holds that by regular shtarot, such as the case that we were dealing with now, not gitin, he doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar dere demesira karti. Ela machvarta, therefore the correct understanding of the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel, by the case of two shtarot coming out issued at the same day, Rav ke Rabbi Meir, Shmuel ke Rabbi Elazar. It's because Rav holds like Rabbi Meir that ede chatima karti, like we said in the beginning, and Shmuel is like Rabbi Elazar who holds ede mesira karti. The Gemara raises a question from a braita. Meti ve, we have a braita that says, shne shtarot ayutzim v'yom echad cholkim. Or we have a braita openly that says the case of two shtarot that are issued on the same day, and we don't know now who to give the field to, who to give the property to, cholkim, we divide it. Oh, that's clearly like Rav. Tiyuvta de Shmuel. This is a conclusive refutation against Shmuel. Answers the Gemara, Amar lach Shmuel. Shmuel can always say, Hamani, who is the author of that braita? Rabbi Meiri. That's according to Rabbi Meir, who holds a dechatima karti. Ve'ana de'amri ke Rabbi Elazar. But I go like Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar argues with him and holds that no, edem mesira karti. And therefore you have to say shuda didaini. The Gemara says, oh yeah? I Rabbi Meir, if that braita is going like Rabbi Meir, you're saying, eima seifa, continue to the next part of that braita. Katav le'echad u'masar le'acher. In a case where he wrote a shtar to one individual. Right? He wrote in the shtar for one person. And then he gave it Umasar le'acher, he transmitted the shtar to another individual. Ze shemasar lo kana, the one who it was transmitted to, he is the one who acquires the property. Ve'i Rabbi Meir, amai kana. If you're saying the braita is like Rabbi Meir, why is the one who was masar lo, the one who received it, why is he kone? Ha'amar edechatima karti. But according to Rabbi Meir, we go by the signatories, we go by the signatures. The witnesses who witnessed the signing of the shtar. We don't go by the time of Mesira. So why is it that the one who it was given to him, the land is acquired? No, it should be acquired by the one whose name was signed for by the edim in the shtar. Answers the Gemara, Tana'ehi. Meaning like this, we see over here from this baita, really this baita was not said according to Rabbi Meir, rather like Rabbi Elazar, right? Who holds edem esira is the main thing. And the first part of the Braita that says that two shtarot ayotzim yom echad cholkim, that's because according to Rabbi Lazar also, cholkim, chaluka, division is better than shuda dedaini. So we have a problem with Shmuel. Shmuel said shuda dedaini is better than chaluka. So how do we understand his opinion? We have a Braita here that even according to Rabbi Lazar, we say cholkim. Therefore, the Gemara says tanaehi. Really, it's a machloke tanaim. Whether shuda dedaini is better or chaluka division is better, it's a machloke between tanaim. Detanya, we learned in a braita. Vachachamim omrim yachloku, vekan amru mashirtze ashalish yase. This braita is talking about a case where a person sent an amount of money to another by a shaliach. He gave money to a shaliach and said, go give this money to so-and-so. And by the time the shaliach, the messenger, arrived, the person who was supposed to receive the money died. In the meantime, the individual who sent the money also died. So now what? What do we do now with the money? So the Tanaim have a machloket. What do we do with the money? According to Chachamim, yachloku. The heirs of the one who sent the money, the yorshim of the one who sent the money, and the heirs of the one who was supposed to receive, they divided between them. That's yachloku. The yorshim of the one who sent the money and the yorshim of the one who was supposed to receive it, they divide the money. V'kan amru, and over here in Bavel, they said, ma shirtze ha-shalish yase. What the third party wants to do. Who's the third party here? That's the messenger. He does as he pleases with the money. Which means whatever he decides, it's up to his discretion, whether to give it to the one who he's supposed to give it to, meaning his yoshim, or to the ones who sent, to the yoshim of the one who sent him. So now this is similar to what we see. Do we say cholkim or do we say shuda dedaini? So we see it's already a machloket between chachamim of Eretz Yisrael and the chachamim of Bavel. The Gemara tells us a story. Imeh derami barchama. The mother of Rami Bar Chama, katavtinu lenichsa, she wrote a shtar that transferred the ownership of her property leRami Bar Chama to her son Rami Bar Chama betzafra. She wrote it in the morning. Again, the mother of Rami Bar Chama wrote a shtar in which she transferred ownership of her property to Rami Bar Chama. She wrote it in the morning. Le'urta kataftinu lemar ukva barchama. In the evening, she wrote another shtar, transferring her property to a different son of hers, mar ukva barchama. This was a great mother. Both of her sons were amoraim. One was Rami barchama, one was mar ukva barchama. In the morning, she wrote her nechasim, her property off to Rami, and in the evening, to mar ukva. Oh, this is the shne shtarot ayotzim biyom echad. Ata Rami barchama lekamed rav sheshet. Rami Bar Chama came before Rav Sheshet, right? Okme benichse. So Rav Sheshet established Rami Bar Chama's right on the property. Ata Mar Ukva lekame de Rav Nachman, ukme benichse. Mar Ukva, however, went to Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman, ukme benichse, established it by Mar Ukva. So we have here a machloket Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman. Ata Rav Sheshet lekame de Rav Nachman. So Rav Sheshet, he goes over to Rav Nachman and he says to him, Amarle, my tama avad marhachi. Why did you do this? Why did you give this psak? I already was posek that the property goes to Rami Bar Chama. It was given to him in the morning. Why did you do this? Amarle, and Rav Nachman said to Rav Sheshet, my tama avad marhachi. And what's your reason? Why did you give it to Rami and not to Mar Ukva? Amarle de kadim. He said to him, because Rami Bar Chama's shtar was the first one. Amarle, so Rav Nachman told him, atu birushalayim yatvinan. The Katvinan Shaot, what are we sitting here in Yerushalayim, where there is a minhag to write the hours on the shtarot? Right? The halacha is that in any place where the hours are not written on the shtarot, it doesn't matter when during the day the shtar was written. It goes by the discretion of the dayanim. So are we in Yerushalayim? We're in Bavel. Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet, we're in Bavel. We're not in Yerushalayim where they have the minhag to write the hours. So the question is, Elamar Maitama Avad Hachi. So Rav Sheshet asked Rav Nachman, okay, so why did you do that? Why did you give it to Mar Ukva? Amar Le Shuda Dedaini, because I hold it goes by the discretion of the Dayanim. And it seemed to me that I think that his mother wanted it to be received by him more than Rami Bar Chama. Amar leser Rav Sheshet says to Rav Nachman, Anana mishuda didaini. I also used the principle of Shuda didaini when I gave it to Rami Bar Chama. Amar le, Rav Nachman said to him, Chada, one answer to you is, De'ana dayana umar lav dayana. I, Rav Nachman, I am a dayan, I am a judge. You, with all due respect, Rav Sheshet, you're not a dayan. He didn't serve in an official capacity as a dayan like Rav Nachman did, as we know throughout Chas. So Rav Nachman says, listen, Shuda didaini, the discretion by the judges. I am a judge, I am a dayan officially. You're not, that's number one. Ve'od, and furthermore, Meikara, already from the beginning, Lav betoratachi atitla. In the beginning, you didn't arrive at your conclusion for this reason. Your reasoning was because that you said to me because he received the shtar earlier in the morning. And that's incorrect because the hours are not written here on the shtar. So don't tell me now, Shuda didaini. Your original reasoning was because of the timing. And that's a wrong reason. Therefore, the halakha should be like what I say, that it goes to Mar Ukva. It's a nice little pleasant give and take between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet in this case. The Gemara tells us another incident, in a case where one person wrote two shtarot about the same piece of property. There was a case of two shtarot that came before Rav Yosef. One, the date was written on the 5th of Nisan, the field was sold to so-and-so. In the other shtar, it was written Benisan Stama. It was just plainly written Nisan without specifying which day in Nisan. So Rav Yosef established the property in the hands of the one who had the shtar that had the specific date of the 5th of Nisan. Amar le idach. So the other one with the other shtar, the other claimant, he says to Rav Yosef, Va'ana afsid? What, do I lose? I mean, after all, it's possible that my shtar was actually written before the other one. Maybe mine was on the 3rd or the 2nd of Nisan. So why, I just lose like that? Amar le, Rav Yosef said to him, I'm sorry. At yadecha ala tachtona. You're at a disadvantage. Because it doesn't say any specific date in your shtar. In other words, it gives the option to say, Eima bar 29 benisan at. It's possible to say that your shtar was given on the 29th of Nisan. How do I know? So since there's no way to prove otherwise, the property is given to the one who has the more specific shtar. Amar le, so the man said to him, V'nichtov li mar tirfa me'iyar va'ilach. Okay, Rabbeinu, so can you at least do me a favor? Can you write a shtar tirfa? Remember, shtar tirfa is the authorization by Bedin to go ahead and repossess leaned property that the seller sold to someone else from Me'iyar Vailach. In other words, you're saying that my shtar is at least, at worst, it's like it's written the 29th of Nisan. So please, write a shtar that I did not receive this field that he wanted to sell to me, and therefore I have the right to go to fields that he sold after Iyar and repossess them. Can you give me a shtar tirfa? Amar le. Rav Yosef said to him, Yachlele Memarlach, look, the purchaser of those fields can say to you, At Bar Chad Benisanat, your shtar is from the 1st of Nisan. In other words, the field that you purchased was really yours. And it's the other person whose shtar is written for the 5th of Nisan who took it illegally. Therefore, go take possession of his field, then come and repossess our field. In other words, Rav Yosef was telling him, I can't write you a shtar tirfa like that because they will be able to claim, look, what kind of a shtar are you using here? It doesn't say which day. It could be you have the earlier date than the one who has the 5th of Nisan. So go repossess his. What are you repossessing our field? So the Gemara says, okay, but maita kante. So what's the remedy here? What's the solution for this poor guy? Answers the Gemara, nichtevu harsha'a lehadadeh. Let the people who have, these two people who have the shtarot written to them, let them write a shtar harsha'a, a shtar of authorization to each other. Which means the one with the non-specific shtar should ask the one with the shtar of the, where it says the 5th of Nisan, he should ask him to write for him a shtar harsha'a on that, you know, document of sale. he should write authorization for him, that he gives him permission to go and repossess anything that was purchased from the first day of Iyar and on. And so on. Therefore, when he goes to repossess, he's doing it either from his power or from the power of his friend. Meaning like this, if let's say they'll tell him, ah, no, your shtar was before him, go to your friend, and your friend took it illegally, then he can say, okay, I'm collecting by the power of my friend, by his shtar, that has, he wrote for me a harsha'a. So therefore, since it was sold to me with a guarantee, I can repossess from you. Which means I'm using his authorizations, the one that you're telling me to go and repossess, well, I'm using his authorization to go and collect from your field. And if they say that, no, you're the later one, okay, then he could collect on his own. Then if I'm the later one, then fine, on my own I have the power to repossess field that you bought from the first of Iyar and on, since I have a shi'bud on it.